Without further ado, Takuan nodded.
All right, so be it.
He took hold of the rope after freeing it from the railing and dragged Takezo like a dog on a leash to the tree. The prisoner went meekly, head bowed, uttering not a sound. He seemed so repentant that some of the softer-hearted members of the crowd felt a bit sorry for him. The excitement of capturing the wild beast had hardly worn off, however, and with great gusto, everyone joined in the fun. Having tied several lengths of rope together, they hoisted him up to a branch about 30 feet from the ground and lashed him tightly. So bound, he looked less like a living man than a big straw doll. After Otsu came back to the temple from the mountains, she began feeling a strange and intense melancholy whenever she was alone in her room. She wondered why, since being alone was nothing new to her, and there were always some people around the temple. She had all the comforts of home, yet felt lonelier now than she had at any time during those 3 long days on the desolate hillside with only Takuan as a companion. Sitting at the low table by her window, her chin resting on her palms, she reflected on her feelings for half a day before coming to a conclusion. She felt that this experience had given her an insight into her own heart. Loneliness, she mused, is like hunger. It isn't outside, but inside oneself. To be lonely, she thought, is to sense that one lacks something. Something vitally necessary, but what, she knew not. Neither the people around her nor the amenities of life at the temple could assuage the feeling of isolation she now felt. In the mountains, there had only been the silence, the trees and the mist, but there had also been Takuan. It came to her like a revelation that he was not entirely outside herself. His words had gone straight to her heart, and warmed and lighted it as no fire or lamp could. She then came to the innocent realization that she was lonely because Takuan was not around. Having made this discovery, she stood up, but her mind still grappled with the problem at hand. After deciding Takezo's punishment, Takuan had been closeted in the guest room with the samurai from Himeji a good deal of the time. What with having to go back and forth to the village on this errand and that, he'd had no time to sit down and talk with her as he had in the mountains. Otsu sat down again. If only she had a friend. She didn't need many, just one who knew her well, someone she could lean on, someone strong and completely trustworthy. That was what she longed for, craved so badly that she was nearly at her wit's end. There was always, of course, her flute, but by the time a girl is 16, there are questions and uncertainties inside her that can't be answered by a piece of bamboo. She needed intimacy and a sense of partaking in, not just observing, real life. "It's all so disgusting," she said out loud, but voicing her feeling in no way mitigated her hatred for Matahachi. Tears spilled onto the little lacquered table. The angry blood coursing through her veins turned her temples blue. Her head throbbed. Silently, the door behind her slid open. In the temple kitchen, the fire for the evening meal burned brightly.
"Aha! So, this is where you've been hiding. Sitting here, letting the whole day slip through your fingers?"
The figure of Osugi appeared at the door. Startled out of her abstraction, Otsu hesitated a moment before welcoming the old woman and putting a cushion down for her to sit on. Without so much as a "by your leave," Osugi seated herself.
"My good daughter-in-law," she began in grandiose tones.
"Yes, ma'am," answered Otsu,
cowed into bowing deeply before the old harridan.
"Now that you have acknowledged the relationship, there's a little something I want to talk to you about. But first, bring me some tea. I've been talking till now with Takuan and the samurai from Himeji, and the acolyte here didn't even serve us refreshments. I'm parched."
Otsu obeyed and brought her some tea.
I want to talk about Matahachi, the old woman said without prelude. Of course, I'd be a fool to believe anything that lying Takezo says, but it seems Matahachi is alive and staying in a different province.
Is that so? Said Otsu coldly.
I can't be sure, but the fact remains that the priest here, acting as your guardian, agreed to your marriage to my son, and the Hongiden family has already accepted you as his bride. Whatever happens in the future, I trust you don't have any ideas about going back on your word.
Well, you'd never do such a thing, would you?
Otsu let out a soft sigh.
All right, then. I'm glad of that.
She spoke as though adjourning a meeting.
You know how people talk, and there's no telling when Matahachi will be back, so I want you to leave this temple and come live with me. I've more work than I can handle, and since my daughter-in-law's got so much on her hands with her own family, I can't drive her too hard. So, I need your help.
But I...
Who else but Matahachi's bride could come into the Hongiden house?
I don't know, but...
Are you trying to say you don't want to come?
Don't you like the idea of living under my roof?
Most girls would jump at the chance.
No, it's not that. It's...
Well, then, stop dawdling. Get your things together.
Right now? Wouldn't it be better to wait?
Wait for what?
Until Matahachi comes back.
Absolutely not!
Her tone was final.
You just might start getting ideas in your head about other men before that. It's my duty to see that you don't misbehave. In the meantime, I'll also see that you learn how to do field work, care for the silkworms, sew a straight seam, and act like a lady.
Oh, I see. Otsu had no strength to protest. Her head still pounded, and with all this talk of Matahachi, her chest tightened. She feared saying another word, lest she release a torrent of tears.
And there's one other thing, said Osugi.
Heedless of the girl's distress, she raised her head imperiously.
I'm still not quite sure what that unpredictable monk plans to do with Takezo. It worries me. I want you to keep a sharp eye on the two of them until we're sure Takezo is dead, at night as well as in the daytime. If you don't take special care at night, there's no telling what Takua might do. They may be in cahoots.
So you don't mind if I stay here?
For the time being, no, since you can't be in two places at once, can you? You will come with your belongings to the Hongiden house the day that Takezo's head is separated from his body. Understand?
Yes, I understand.
Make sure you don't forget,
Osugi barked as she whooshed out of the room. Thereupon, as though waiting for the chance, a shadow appeared on the paper-covered window and a male voice called softly,
Otsu! Otsu!
Hoping it was Takuan, she hardly looked at the shape of the shadow before rushing to open the window. When she did, she jerked back in surprise, for the eyes meeting hers were the captain's. He reached through, grabbing her hand and squeezing it hard.
You've been kind to me, he said, but I've just received orders from Himeji to go back.
Why, that's too bad. She tried to pull her hand from his, but the grip was too firm.
They seem to be conducting an investigation into the incident here, he explained. If only I had Takezo's head, I could say I had discharged my duty with honor. I'd be vindicated. That crazy, stubborn Takuan won't let me take it. He won't listen to anything I say. But I think you're on my side. That's why I've come here. Take this letter, will you, and read it later, somewhere where no one will see you.
He pressed the letter into her hand and was off in a shot. She could hear him hurriedly walking down the steps to the road. It was more than a letter, for a large gold piece was enclosed. But the message itself was straightforward enough. It asked Otsu to cut off Takezo's head within the next few days and bring it to Himeji, where the writer would make her his wife, and she would live amid wealth and glory for the rest of her days. The missive was signed Aoki Tanzaemon, a name that, according to the writer's own testimony, belonged to one of the most celebrated warriors of the region. She wanted to burst out laughing, but was too indignant. As she finished reading, Takuan called, "Otsu, have you eaten yet?" Slipping her feet into her sandals, she went out to talk with him. "I don't feel like eating. I have a headache."
"What's that in your hand?"
"A letter."
"Another one?"
"Yes."
"From whom?"
"Takuan, you're so nosy."
"Curious, my girl. Inquisitive, not nosy."
"Would you like to have a look at it?"
"If you don't mind."
"Just to pass the time?"
"That's as good a reason as any."
"Here, I don't mind at all." Otsu handed him the letter, and after reading it, Takuan laughed heartily. She couldn't help but let the corners of her mouth turn up, too.
"That poor man! He's so desperate he's trying to bribe you with both love and money. This letter is hilarious. I must say, our world is fortunate indeed to be blessed with such outstanding, upright samurai. He's so brave, he asks a mere girl to do his beheading for him, and so stupid as to put it in writing."
"The letter doesn't bother me," said Otsu. "But what am I going to do with the money?" She handed Takuan the gold piece.
"This is worth quite a lot,"
he said, weighing it in his hand. "That's what bothers me."
"Don't worry. I never have any trouble disposing of money."
Takuan walked around to the front of the temple, where there was an alms box. Preparing to toss the coin in, he touched it to his forehead in deference to the Buddha. Then he changed his mind.
"On second thought, you keep it. I dare say it won't be in the way."
"I don't want it. It'll just cause trouble. I might be questioned about it later. I'd rather just pretend I never saw it."
"This gold, Otsu, no longer belongs to Aoki Tanzaemon. It has become an offering to the Buddha, and the Buddha has bestowed it on you. Keep it for good luck."
Without further protest, Otsu tucked the coin into her obi. Then, looking up at the sky, she remarked, "Windy, isn't it? I wonder if it'll rain tonight. It hasn't rained for ages."
"Spring's almost over, so we're due for a good downpour. We need it to wash away all the dead flowers, not to mention relieving the people's boredom."
"But if it's a heavy rain, what'll happen to Takezo?"
"Takezo,"
the monk mused. Just as the two of them turned toward the cryptomeria, a call came from its upper branches.
"Takua! Takua!"
"What? Is that you, Takezo?"
As Takuan squinted to look up into the tree, Takezo hurled down a stream of imprecations.
"You swine of a monk! You filthy imposter! Come and stand under here! I have something to say to you!"
The wind was beating at the tree's branches violently, and the voice came through broken and disjointed. Leaves swirled around the tree and onto Takuan's upturned face. The monk laughed.
"I see you're still full of life. That's okay. That suits me fine. I hope it's not just the false vitality that comes from the knowledge that you're soon going to die."
"Shut up!"
cried Takezo, who was not so much full of life as full of anger.
"If I were afraid to die, why would I have just kept still while you tied me up?"
"You did that because I am strong and you are weak."
"That's a lie, and you know it."
"Then I'll put it another way. I'm clever, and you are unspeakably stupid."
"You might be right. It was certainly stupid of me to let you catch me."
"Don't squirm so much, monkey in the tree. It won't do you any good. It'll make you bleed if you've any blood left, and frankly, it's quite unbecoming."
"Listen, Takuan."
"I'm listening.
If I had wanted to fight you on the mountain, I could have easily squashed you under one foot like a cucumber.
That's not a very flattering analogy. In any case, you didn't. So, you'd be better off leaving that line of thought. Forget about what happened. It's too late for regrets.
You tricked me with your high-sounding priest talk. That was pretty mean, you bastard. You got me to trust you, and you betrayed me. I let you capture me, yes, but only because I thought you were different from the others. I never thought I'd be humiliated like this.
Get to the point, Takazo,
Takuan said impatiently.
Why are you doing this to me? The straw bundle shrieked. Why don't you just cut off my head and get it over with? I thought that if I had to die, it'd be better to let you choose how to execute me than let that bloodthirsty mob do it. Although you are a monk, you also claim to understand the way of the samurai.
Oh, I do, you poor misguided boy. Much better than you.
I would have been better off letting the villagers catch up with me. At least they're human.
Was that your only mistake, Takazo? Hasn't just about everything you've ever done been some kind of mistake? While you're resting up there, why don't you try thinking about the past a little?
Oh, shut up, you hypocrite. I'm not ashamed. Matahachi's mother can call me anything she wants, but he is my friend. My best friend.
I considered it my responsibility to come and tell the old hag what happened to him, and what does she do?
She tries to incite that mob to torture me. Bringing her news of her precious son was the only reason I broke through the barrier and came here. Is that a violation of the warrior's code?
That's not the point, you imbecile. The trouble with you is that you don't even know how to think. You seem to be under the misconception that if you perform one brave deed, that alone makes you a samurai. Well, it doesn't. You let that one act of loyalty convince you of your righteousness. The more convinced you became, the more harm you caused yourself and everyone else. And now where are you? Caught in a trap you set for yourself, that's where.
He paused.
By the way, how's the view from up there, Takazo?
You pig! I won't forget this.
You'll forget everything soon. Before you turn into dried meat, Takazo, take a good look at the wide world around you. Gaze out onto the world of human beings and change your selfish way of thinking. And then, when you arrive in that other world beyond and are reunited with your ancestors, tell them that just before you died, a man named Takuan Soho told you this. They'll be overjoyed to learn you had such excellent guidance, even if you did learn what life was all about too late to bring anything but shame to your family name.
Otsu, who had been standing transfixed some distance away, came running forward and attacked Takuan in shrill tones.
You're carrying this too far, Takuan. I've been listening. I heard everything. How can you be so cruel to someone who can't even defend himself? You're a religious man, or you're supposed to be. Takezo's telling the truth when he says he trusted you and let you take him without a struggle.
Now, what's all this? Is my comrade in arms turning against me?
Have a heart, Takuan. When I hear you talk like that, I hate you. I really do. If you intend to kill him, then kill him and be done with it. Takezo is resigned to dying. Let him die in peace.
She was so outraged, she grabbed frantically at Takuan's chest.
Be quiet,
he said, with uncharacteristic brutality.
Women know nothing of these matters. Hold your tongue, or I'll hang you up there with him.
No, I won't. I won't, she screamed. I should have a chance to speak, too. Didn't I go to the mountains with you and stay there 3 days and 3 nights?
That has nothing to do with it. Takuan Soho will punish Takezo as he sees fit.
So punish him! Kill him, now! It's not right for you to ridicule his misery while he's lying up there half dead.
That happens to be my only weakness, ridiculing fools like him.
It's inhuman!
Get out of here, now! Go away, Otsu! Leave me alone!
I will not!
Stop being so stubborn!
Takuan shouted, giving Otsu a hard shove with his elbow. When she recovered, she was slumped against the tree. She pressed her face and chest to its trunk and began wailing. She had never dreamed Takuan could be so cruel. The people in the village believed that even if the monk had Takezo tied up for a while, eventually he'd soften and lighten the punishment. Now Takuan had admitted that it was his weakness to enjoy seeing Takezo suffer. Otsu shuddered at the savagery of men. If even Takuan, whom she'd trusted so deeply, could become heartless, then the whole world must indeed be evil beyond comprehension. And if there was no one at all whom she could trust... She felt a curious warmth in this tree, felt somehow that through its great ancient trunk, so thick that 10 men with arms outstretched could not encompass it, there coursed the blood of Takezo, flowing down into it from his precarious prison in the upper branches. How like a samurai's son he was! How courageous! When Takuan had first tied him up, and again just now, she had seen Takezo's weaker side. He too was able to weep. Until now, she'd gone along with the opinion of the crowd, been swayed by it, without having any real idea of the man himself. What was there about him that made people hate him like a demon and hunt him down like a beast? Her back and shoulders heaved with her sobs. Clinging tightly to the tree trunk, she rubbed her tear-stained cheeks against the bark. The wind whistled loudly through the upper branches, which were waving broadly to and fro. Large raindrops fell on her kimono neck and flowed down her back, chilling her spine.
"Come on, Otsu!"
Takuan shouted, covering his head with his hands.
"We'll get soaked!"
She didn't even answer.
"It's all your fault, Otsu! You're a crybaby! You start weeping, the heavens weep too!"
Then, the teasing tone gone from his voice,
"The wind's getting stronger, and it looks like we're in for a big storm, so let's get inside. Don't waste your tears on a man who's going to die anyway. Come on!"
Takuan, sweeping the skirt of his kimono up over his head, ran toward the shelter of the temple. Within seconds, it was pouring, the raindrops making little white spots as they pummeled the ground. Though the water was streaming down her back, Otsu didn't budge. She couldn't tear herself away, even after her drenched kimono was clinging to her skin and she was chilled to the marrow. When her thoughts turned to Takezo, the rain ceased to matter. It didn't occur to her to wonder why she should suffer simply because he was suffering. Her mind was consumed by a newly formed image of what a man should be. She silently prayed his life would be spared. She wandered in circles round the foot of the tree, looking up to Takezo often, but unable to see him because of the storm. Without thinking, she called his name, but there was no answer. A suspicion arose in her mind that he might regard her as a member of the Honiden family, or as just another hostile villager.
"If he stays out in this rain," she thought in despair, "he's sure to die before morning. Oh, isn't there anyone in the world who can save him?"
She started running at full speed, partially propelled by the raging wind. Behind the main temple, the kitchen building and the priest's quarters were tightly shuttered. Water overflowing from the roof gutters slashed deep gullies in the ground as it rushed downhill.
"Takua!"
she screamed. She'd reached the door of his room and began banging on it with all her strength.
"Who is it?"
came his voice from within.
"It's me, Otsu!"
"What are you doing still out there?"
He quickly opened the door and looked at her in astonishment. Despite the building's long eaves, rain showered in on him.
"Come inside, quick!"
he exclaimed, making a grab for her arm, but she pulled back.
"No! I came to ask a favor, not to dry off. I beg you, Takuan, take him down from the tree."
"What? I'll do no such thing,"
he said adamantly.
"Oh, please, Takuan, you must. I'd be grateful to you forever."
She fell on her knees in the mud and lifted her hands in supplication.
It doesn't matter about me, but you must help him, please. You can't just let him die. You can't.
The sound of the torrent nearly blotted out her tearful voice. With her hands still raised before her, she looked like a Buddhist practicing austerities by standing under a freezing waterfall.
I bow before you, Takuan. I beg you. I'll do anything you ask, but please save him.
Takuan was silent. His eyes were tightly closed, like the doors to the shrine where a secret Buddha is kept. Heaving a deep sigh, he opened them and breathed fire.
Go to bed! This minute! You're weak to begin with, and being out in this weather is suicidal.
Oh, please! Please!
She pleaded, reaching for the door.
I'm going to bed. I advise you to do the same.
His voice was like ice. The door slammed shut. Still, she would not give up. She crawled under the house till she reached the spot she guessed was beneath where he slept. She called up to him,
Please, Takuan! It's the most important thing in the world to me. Takuan, can you hear me? Answer me, please! You're a monster! A heartless, cold-blooded fiend!
For a while, the monk listened patiently without replying, but she was making it impossible for him to sleep. Finally, in a fit of temper, he jumped out of bed, shouting,
Help! Thief! There's a thief under my floor! Catch him!
Otsu scrambled out into the storm again and retired in defeat. But she was not finished yet. The Rock and the Tree. By early morning, wind and rain had washed spring away without a trace. A throbbing sun beat down furiously, and few villagers walked around without a wide-brimmed hat for protection. Osugi made her way uphill to the temple, arriving at Takuan's door thirsty and breathless. Beads of sweat emerged from her hairline, converged in rivulets, and coursed straight down her righteous nose. She took no notice of this, for she was brimming over with curiosity about her victim's fate.
Takuan, she called. Did Takezo survive the storm?
The monk appeared on his veranda.
Oh, it's you. Terrific downpour, wasn't it? Yes, she smiled crookedly. It was murderous. I'm sure you know, however, that it isn't very difficult to live through a night or two of even the heaviest rain. The human body can take a lot of buffeting. It's the sun that's really deadly. You don't mean he's still alive, said Osugi in disbelief, at once turning her wrinkled face toward the old cryptomeria.
Her needle-like eyes squinted in the glare. She raised a hand to shield them, and in a moment relaxed a bit.
He's just drooping up there like a wet rag, she said with renewed hope. He can't have any life left in him. He can't. I don't see any crows picking at his face yet, Takuan smiled. I think that means he's still breathing. Thank you for telling me. A man of learning like you must surely know more than I do about such matters.
She craned her neck and peered around him into the building.
I don't see my daughter-in-law anywhere. Would you please call her for me? Your daughter-in-law? I don't believe I've ever met her. In any case, I don't know her name. How can I call her? Call her, I say, Osugi repeated impatiently. Who on earth are you talking about? Why, Otsu, of course. Otsu? Why do you call her your daughter-in-law? She hasn't entered the Honiden family, has she? No, not yet, but I plan to take her in very soon as Matahachi's bride. That's hard to imagine. How can she marry someone when he's not around?
Osugi became more indignant.
Look, you vagabond, this has nothing to do with you. Just tell me where Otsu is. I imagine she's still in bed. Oh, yes, I should have thought of that, the old woman muttered, half to herself.
I did tell her to watch Takezo nights, so she must become pretty tired by daybreak. Incidentally, she said accusingly, aren't you supposed to be watching him during the day? Without waiting for an answer, she did an about-face and marched under the tree. There she stared upward for a long time, as if in a trance. When it finally broke, she plodded off toward the village, mulberry stick in hand. Takuan returned to his room, where he stayed until evening. Otsu's room was not far from his, in the same building. Her door was also closed all day, except when opened by the acolyte, who several times brought her medicine or an earthenware pot full of thick rice gruel. When they had found her half-dead in the rain the night before, they'd had to drag her in, kicking and screaming, and force her to swallow some tea. The priest had then given her a severe scolding while she sat mutely propped against a wall. By morning, she had a high fever and was hardly able to lift her head to drink the gruel. Night fell, and in sharp contrast to the previous evening, a bright moon shone like a clearly cut hole in the sky. When everyone else was sound asleep, Takuan put down the book he was reading, slipped into his wooden clogs, and went out into the yard. "Takezo!" he called. High above him, a branch shook and glistening dewdrops fell. "Poor boy, I guess he doesn't have the strength to reply," Takuan said to himself. "Takezo! Takezo!" "What do you want, you bastard of a monk?" came the ferocious response. Takuan was seldom taken off guard, but he could not conceal his surprise. "You certainly howl loudly for a man at death's door. Sure you're not really a fish or some kind of sea monster? At this rate, you ought to last another 5 or 6 days. By the way, how's your stomach? Empty enough for you?"
"Forget the small talk, Takuan. Just cut my head off and get it over with."
"Oh, no, not so fast. One has to be careful about things like that. If I cut your head off right now, it'll probably fly down and try to bite me."
Takuan's voice trailed off, and he stared at the sky.
"What a beautiful moon. You're lucky to be able to view it from such an excellent vantage point."
"Okay, just watch me, you filthy mongrel of a monk. I'll show you what I can do if I put my mind to it."
With every ounce of strength in him, Takezo then began to shake himself violently, flinging his weight up and down and nearly breaking off the branch he was bound to. Bark and leaves rained down on the man below, who remained unruffled but perhaps a bit affectedly nonchalant. The monk calmly brushed his shoulders clean, and when he was finished, he looked up again.
"That's the spirit, Takezo. It's good to get as angry as you are now. Go ahead. Feel your strength to the fullest. Show you're a real man. Show us what you're made of. People these days think it's a sign of wisdom and character to be able to control their anger, but I say they're foolish. I hate seeing the young being so restrained, so proper. They have more spirit than their elders, and they should show it. Don't hold back, Takezo. The madder you get, the better."
"Just wait, Takuan. Just wait. If I have to chew through this rope with my bare teeth, I will, just to get my hands on you and tear you limb from limb."
"Is that a promise or a threat? If you really think you can do it, I'll stay down here and wait. Are you sure you can keep it up without killing yourself before the rope breaks?"
"Shut up!"
Takezo screamed hoarsely.
"Say, Takezo, you really are strong. The whole tree is swaying. But I don't notice the earth shaking, sorry to say. You know, the trouble with you is that, in reality, you're weak. Your kind of anger is nothing more than personal malice. A real man's anger is an expression of moral indignation. Anger over petty emotional trifles is for women, not men."
"It won't be long now," he threatened. "I'll go straight for the neck."
Takezo struggled on, but the thick rope showed no sign of weakening. Takuan looked on for a time, then offered some friendly advice.
"Why don't you cut that out, Takezo? You're getting nowhere. You'll just wear yourself out, and what good is that going to do you? Squirm and wriggle all you like. You couldn't break a single branch of this tree, much less make a dent in the universe.
Takezo gave out a mighty groan. His tantrum was over. He realized the monk was right.
I dare say all that strength would be put to better use working for the good of the country. You really should try doing something for others, Takezo, although it is a little late to start now. If you'd just tried, you'd have had a chance at moving the gods, or even the universe, not to mention plain everyday people.
Takuan's voice took on a slightly pontifical tone.
It's a pity, a great pity. Though you were born human, you're more like an animal, no better than a boar or wolf. How sad it is that a handsome young man like you has to meet his end here, without ever having become truly human. What a waste.
You call yourself human?
Takezo spat.
Listen, you barbarian. All along you've had too much confidence in your own brute strength, thinking you didn't have a match in the world. But look where you are now.
I've got nothing to be ashamed of. It wasn't a fair fight.
In the long run, Takezo, it doesn't make any difference. You were outwitted and out-talked instead of being out-pummeled. When you've lost, you've lost. And whether you like it or not, I'm sitting on this rock, and you're lying up there helpless. Can't you see the difference between you and me?
Yeah, you fight dirty. You're a liar and a coward.
It would have been crazy of me to try to take you by force. You're too strong, physically. A human being doesn't have much chance wrestling a tiger. Luckily, he rarely has to, being the more intelligent of the two. Not many people would argue with the fact that tigers are inferior to humans.
Takezo gave no indication that he was still listening.
It's the same with your so-called courage. Your conduct up till now gives no evidence that it's anything more than animal courage, the kind that has no respect for human values and life. That's not the kind of courage that makes a samurai. True courage knows fear. It knows how to fear that which should be feared. Honest people value life passionately. They hang on to it like a precious jewel. And they pick the right time and place to surrender it, to die with dignity.
Still no answer.
That's what I meant when I said it's a pity about you. You were born with physical strength and fortitude, but you lack both knowledge and wisdom. While you manage to master a few of the more unfortunate features of the way of the samurai, you made no effort to acquire learning or virtue. People talk about combining the way of learning with the way of the samurai. But when properly combined, they aren't two. They're one. Only one way, Takezo.
The tree was as silent as the rock on which Takuan sat. The darkness, too, was still. After several moments, Takuan rose slowly and deliberately.
Think about it one more night, Takezo. After you do, I'll cut off your head for you.
He started walking away, taking long, thoughtful strides, his head bowed. He hadn't gone more than 20 paces when Takezo's voice rang out urgently.
Wait!
Takuan turned and called back.
What do you want now?
Come back.
Don't tell me you want to hear more. Could it be that at last you're beginning to think?
Takua, save me!
Takezo's cry for help was loud and plaintive. The branch began to tremble, as though the whole tree were weeping.
I want to be a better man. I realize now how important it is. What a privilege it is to be born human.
I'm almost dead, but I understand what it means to be alive. And now that I know, my whole life will consist of being tied to this tree. I can't undo what I've done.
You're finally coming to your senses. For the first time in your life, you're talking like a human being.
I don't want to die,
Takezo cried.
I want to live. I want to go out, try again, do everything right this time.
His body convulsed with his sobbing.
Takua, please, help me. Help me.
The monk shook his head.
Sorry, Takezo. It's out of my hands. It's the law of nature. You can't do things over again. That's life. Everything in it is for keeps. Everything. You can't put your head back on after the enemy's cut it off. That's the way it is. Of course, I feel sorry for you, but I can't undo that rope because it wasn't me who tied it. It was you. All I can do is give you some advice. Face death bravely and quietly. Say a prayer and hope someone bothers to listen. And for the sake of your ancestors, Takezo, have the decency to die with a peaceful look on your face.
The clatter of Takuan's sandals faded into the distance. He was gone, and Takezo cried out no more. Following the spirit of the monk's advice, he shut the eyes that had just experienced a great awakening and forgot everything. He forgot about living and about dying, and under the myriad tiny stars lay perfectly still as the night breeze sighed through the tree. He was cold, very cold. After a while, he sensed that someone was at the base of the tree. Whoever it was clutching the broad trunk and trying frantically, but not very adroitly, to climb up to the lowest branch. Takezo could hear the climber slipping downward after almost every upward advance. He could also hear chips of bark falling to the ground, and was sure that the hands were being skinned much worse than the tree was. But the climber kept at it doggedly, digging into the tree again and again, until finally the first branch was within reach. Then the form rose with relative ease to where Takezo, barely distinguishable from the branch he was stretched on, lay depleted of every ounce of strength. A panting voice whispered his name. With great difficulty he opened his eyes and found himself face to face with a veritable skeleton. Only the eyes were alive and vibrant. The face spoke.
"It's me,"
it said, with childlike simplicity.
"Otsu?"
"Yes, me.
Oh, Takezo, let's run away. I heard you scream out that you wanted with all your heart to live."
"Run away? You'll untie me? Set me free?"
"Yes. I can't stand this village anymore either. If I stay here... oh, I don't even want to think about it. I have my reasons. I just want to get out of this stupid, cruel place. I'll help you, Takezo. We can help each other."
Otsu was already wearing traveling clothes, and all her worldly possessions hung from her shoulder in a small fabric bag.
"Quick, cut the rope. What are you waiting for? Cut it. It won't take a minute."
She unsheathed a small dagger and in no time severed the captive's bonds. Several minutes passed before the tingling in his limbs eased and he could flex his muscles. She tried to support his entire weight, with the result that when he slipped, she went down with him. The two bodies clung to each other, bounced off a limb, twisted in the air, and crashed to the ground. Takezo stood up. Dazed from the 30-foot fall and numbingly weak, he nevertheless planted his feet firmly on the earth. Otsu writhed in pain on her hands and knees.
"Oh,"
she moaned. Putting his arms around her, he helped her up.
"Do you think you broke something?" "I have no idea, but I think I can walk."
We had all those branches to break the fall, so you're probably not too badly hurt.
What about you? You okay?
Yes, I'm okay. He paused a second or two, then blurted out. I'm alive. I'm really alive.
Of course you are.
It's not of course.
Let's get out of here fast. If anybody finds us here, we'll be in real trouble.
Otsu started limping away and Takezo followed. Slowly, silently, like two frail wounded insects walking on the autumn frost. They proceeded as best they could, hobbling along in silence. A silence broken only much later when Otsu cried,
Look! It's getting light over toward Harima.
Where are we?
At the top of Nakayama Pass.
Have we really come that far?
Yes,
Otsu smiled weakly.
Surprising what you can do when you're determined. But Takezo,
Otsu looked alarmed.
You must be famished. You haven't eaten anything for days.
At the mention of food, Takezo suddenly realized his shrunken stomach was cramped with pain. Now that he was aware of it, it was excruciating, and it seemed like hours before Otsu managed to undo her bag and take out the food. Her gift of life took the form of rice cakes, stuffed generously with sweet bean paste. As their sweetness slid smoothly down his throat, Takezo grew giddy. The fingers holding the cake shook.
I'm alive,
he thought, over and over, vowing that from that moment on, he'd live a very different sort of life. The reddish clouds of morning turned their cheeks rosy. As he began to see Otsu's face more clearly and hunger gave way to a sated calm, it seemed like a dream that he was sitting here safe and sound with her.
When it gets light, we'll have to be very careful. We're almost at the provincial border, said Otsu.
Takezo's eyes widened. The border? That's right, I forgot. I have to go to Hinagura.
Hinagura? Why?
That's where they've got my sister locked up. I have to get her out of there. Guess I'll have to say goodbye.
Otsu peered into his face in stunned silence.
If that's the way you feel about it, go. But if I'd thought you were going to desert me, I wouldn't have left Miyamoto.
What else can I do? Just leave her there in the stockade?
With a look that pressed in on him, she took his hand in hers. Her face, her whole body, was aflame with passion.
Takezo, she pleaded. I'll tell you how I feel about this later, when there's time, but please, don't leave me alone here. Take me with you, wherever you go.
But I can't.
Remember,
she gripped his hand tight,
whether you like it or not, I'm staying with you. If you think I'll be in the way when you're trying to rescue Oging, then I'll go to Himeji and wait.
All right, do that. He agreed instantly.
You'll definitely come, won't you?
Of course.
I'll be waiting at Hanada Bridge, just outside Himeji. I'll wait for you there, whether it takes 100 days or 1,000.
Answering with a slight nod, Takezo was off without further ado, racing along the ridge leading from the pass into the far distant mountains. Otsu raised her head to watch him till his body melted into the scenery. Back in the village, Osugi's grandson came charging up to the Honiden Manor house, shouting,
Grandma! Grandma!
Wiping his nose with the back of his hand, he peered into the kitchen and said excitedly,
Grandma! Have you heard? Something awful's happened!
Osugi, who was standing before the stove, coaxing a fire with a bamboo fan, barely looked his way.
What's all the fuss about?
Grandma, don't you know? Takezo's escaped.
Escaped?
She dropped the fan in the flames.
What are you talking about?
This morning he wasn't in the tree. The rope was cut.
Heida, you know what I said about telling tales.
It's the truth, Grandma. Honest. Everybody's talking about it.
Are you absolutely sure?
Yes, ma'am. And up at the temple, they're searching for Otsu. She's gone too. Everybody's running around shouting.
The visible effect of the news was colorful. Osugi's face whitened shade by shade as the flames of her burning fan turned from red to blue to violet. Her face soon seemed drained of all blood, so much so that Heita shrank in fear.
Heita!
Yes?
Run as fast as your legs can carry you. Fetch your daddy right away. Then go down to the riverbank and get Uncle Gong. And hurry!
Osugi's voice quivered. Before Heita even reached the gate, a crowd of muttering villagers had arrived. Among them were Osugi's son-in-law, Uncle Gong, other relatives, and a number of tenants.
That girl, Otsu's, run away too, hasn't she? And Takuan's not around either.
Looks pretty funny, if you ask me.
They were in it together, that's for sure.
Wonder what the old woman will do. Her family honor's at stake.
The son-in-law and Uncle Gong, carrying lances passed down to them from their ancestors, stared blankly toward the house. Before they could do anything, they needed guidance, so they stood there restlessly waiting for Osugi to appear and issue orders.
Granny!
Someone finally shouted. Haven't you heard the news?
I'll be there in a minute, came the reply. All of you, just be quiet and wait.
Osugi quickly rose to the occasion. When she'd realized the awful news had to be true, her blood boiled, but she managed to control herself enough to kneel before the family altar. After silently saying a prayer of supplication, she raised her head, opened her eyes, and turned around. Calmly, she opened the doors of the sword chest, pulled out a drawer, and withdrew a treasured weapon. Having already donned attire suitable for a manhunt, she slipped the short sword in her obi and went to the entranceway, where she tied her sandal thongs securely round her ankles. The odd hush that greeted her as she approached the gate made clear they knew what she was dressed for. The stubborn old woman meant business and was more than ready to avenge the insult to her house.
"Everything's going to be all right," she announced in clipped tones. "I'm going to chase down that shameless hussy myself and see to it she receives her proper punishment."
Her jaw clamped shut. She was already walking briskly down the road before someone in the crowd spoke up.
"If the old woman is going, we should go too."
All the relatives and tenants stood up and fell in behind their doughty matriarch, arming themselves as they went with sticks, fashioning bamboo lances hastily as they walked. They marched directly to Nakayama Pass, not even pausing to rest on the way. They reached it just before noon, only to find that they were too late.
"We've let them get away!" one man shouted.
The crowd seethed with anger. To add to their frustration, a border official approached to inform them that such a large group could not pass through. Uncle Gong came forward and pleaded earnestly with the official, describing Takezo as a criminal, Otsu as evil, and Takuan as crazy.
"If we drop this matter now," he explained, "it will sully the name of our ancestors. We'll never be able to hold up our heads. We'll be the laughingstock of the village. The Hongidem family might even have to abandon its land."
The official said he understood their predicament, but could do nothing to help. The law's the law. He could perhaps send an inquiry on to Himeji and get them special permission to cross the border, but that would take time. Osugi, after conferring with her relatives and tenants, stepped in front of the official and asked,
"In that case, is there any reason why two of us, myself and Uncle Gong, can't go through?"
"Up to 5 people are permitted."
Osugi nodded her acquiescence. Then, although it looked as if she was about to deliver a moving farewell, she instead called her followers together in a very matter-of-fact way. They lined up before her, staring attentively at her thin-lipped mouth and large protruding teeth. When they were all quiet, she said,
"There's no reason for you to be upset. I anticipated something like this happening before we even set out. When I put on this short sword, one of the most prized Hongiden heirlooms, I knelt before our ancestors' memorial tablet and bade them a formal farewell.
I also made two vows. One was that I would overtake and punish the brazen female who has smeared our name with mud. The other was that I'd find out for sure, even if I died trying, whether my son, Matahachi, is alive. And if he is, I'll bring him home to carry on the family name. I swore to do this, and I will do it, even if it means tying a rope around his neck and dragging him all the way back. He has an obligation not only to me and to those departed, but to you as well. He will then find a wife 100 times better than Otsu and blot out this disgrace for all time, so that the villagers will once again recognize our house as a noble and honorable one. As they were applauding and cheering, one man uttered something sounding like a groan. Osugi stared fixedly at her son-in-law. "Now, Uncle Gong and I," she went on, "are both old enough to retire. We are both in agreement on everything I've vowed to do, and he, too, is resolved to accomplish them, even if it means spending 2 or 3 years doing nothing else, even if it means walking the length and breadth of the country. While I'm gone, my son-in-law will take my place as head of the house. During that time, you must promise to work as hard as ever. I don't want to hear of any of you neglecting the silkworms or letting weeds grow wild in the fields. Do you understand?" Uncle Gong was nearly 50, Osugi 10 years older. The crowd seemed hesitant to let them go it alone, since they were obviously no match for Takezo in the event that they should ever find him. They all imagined him to be a madman who would attack and kill for the smell of blood alone. "Wouldn't it be better," someone suggested, "if you took 3 young men along with you? The man said that 5 can pass through." The old woman shook her head with vehemence. "I don't need any help. I never have and never will. Ha! Everyone thinks Takezo is so strong, but he doesn't scare me. He's only a brat, with not much more hair on him than when I knew him as a baby. I'm not his equal in physical strength, of course, but I haven't lost my wits. I can still outsmart an enemy or two. Uncle Gong's not senile yet either. Now, I've told you what I'm going to do," she said, pointing her index finger at her nose, "and I'm going to do it. There's nothing left for you to do but go home. So go, and take care of everything till we return." She shooed them away and walked up to the barrier. No one tried to stop her again. They called their goodbyes and watched as the old couple started their journey eastward down the mountainside.
"The old lady really has guts, doesn't she?" someone remarked.
Another man cupped his hands and shouted,
"If you get sick, send a messenger back to the village."
A third called solicitously,
"Take care of yourselves!"
When she could no longer hear their voices, Osugi turned to Uncle Gon.
"We don't have a thing to worry about," she assured him. "We're going to die before those young people anyway." "You're absolutely right," he replied with conviction.
Uncle Gon made his living hunting, but in his younger days he had been a samurai involved, to hear him tell it, in many a gory battle. Even now his skin was healthily ruddy and his hair as black as ever. His surname was Fuchikawa. Gon stood for Gonroku, his given name. As Matahachi's uncle, he was naturally quite concerned and upset about the recent goings-on.
"Granny," he said.
"What?"
"You had the foresight to dress for the road, but I'm just wearing my everyday clothes. I'll have to stop somewhere for sandals and a hat."
"There's a tea house about halfway down this hill."
"So there is. Yes, I remember. It's called the Mikazuki Tea House, isn't it? I'm sure they'll have what I need."
By the time they reached the tea house, they were surprised to see that the sun was beginning to set.
They had thought they had more daylight hours ahead of them, since the days were growing longer with the approach of summer. More time to search on this, their first day in pursuit of their lost family honor. They had some tea and rested for a while. Then, as Osugi laid down the money for the bill, she said, "Takano's too far to reach by..."